Mark Brewer as former chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. Jeff Timmer as former executive director of the Michigan Republicans. And this is a Republic, if you can keep it, with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
We're back with another week of A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Jeff Timmer, along with my brother from another mother, Mark Brewer.
An odd couple doesn't have anything on us.
Later in the program, Mark Brewer and I will be joined by the president of Michigan's top-rated polling company, Epic MRA. We begin, as always, with a look back at the politics of the last week. Mark, we've talked often about the battle over voter suppression. There's a new compromised voting rights bill being debated in Congress that mirrors the concerns of Joe Manchin, which could mean that it could overcome the promise of a McConnell filibuster. Can you explain what they're looking at?
Yeah, and this emerged just in the last several days on the House side, and it has some very creative elements in it, and I'll try to explain this in non-legalese. First of all, the U.S. Supreme Court just recently issued a very narrow decision on what's left of the Voting Rights Act, Section 2, which applies across the country and bars discrimination in voting and redistricting. And this bill would undo that very narrow Supreme Court decision. So that's really good. It'll give us Section 2 back. Another very technical area, but it's had a big impact, is that the Supreme Court has frowned upon and really put the kibosh on what they call late litigation, you know, litigation close to an election. And so what you've seen now are legislators waiting until the last minute to change the election laws. And then when people like me go to court, court says, it's too close to the election. We can't do anything. This bill would say, no. You can't do that. You know, it would really restrain that principle. The final thing, and probably the broadest thing, is that, you know, we've had this whole dispute over what's called preclearance. That originated in the 60s under the Voting Rights Act, that states that historically discriminated against African-Americans had to get voting rights changes pre-cleared in advance by the Justice Department.
And not many people know that Michigan was covered under that, not just Southern Confederate
states. A couple of places in Michigan were. But in 2013, in a very infamous decision, the United States Supreme Court said, it's a better day. Racism is gone. We don't need this anymore. They're wrong, but that's what happened. So there's been a struggle since by civil rights advocates to try to restore some of that preclearance. Because what happened immediately after that Supreme Court decision was that states like North Carolina, Georgia, Texas, they all rushed to impose these discriminatory voting restrictions. What this bill says is that, well, we're not going to pick on the southern states. We're going to take a category of issues like photo ID and say that every state has to get those things approved by the Department of Justice. So they do a nice end run around the Supreme Court decision, which was said, look, it's unfair to pick on the South. Well, whether that's true or not, this bill doesn't do that. It broadens it and says every state and a certain categories of voting restrictions has to get the approval of the Justice Department. I think in total, Jeff, this bill is very creative, deals with some really serious problems. I think it can pass the House, but then, as your introduction indicated, the question is going to be, again, can they get the 60 votes in the Senate, or will people like Senator Manchin be willing to make an exception to the filibuster rule for voting rights? And that remains to be seen, but I'm glad to see on behalf of my party that Democrats haven't given up on this, that they keep coming back with creative compromises, and we're going to keep putting these to a vote. And maybe at some point, Manchin is convinced that he's never going to get bipartisanship in this area, and he needs to alter the filibuster rule and get some voting rights legislation passed. We'll see.
They could just come up with body doubles for Manchin and Sinema and make this all happen a lot easier than they're doing so far. But short of that, this is, you're right, it's very creative. We've talked about this throughout the time we've been doing this podcast this year, about how critical it is that we address the efforts to attack voting rights from a federal level. Because if we don't, It doesn't matter how many infrastructure bills they pass. It doesn't matter how low joblessness is. It doesn't matter how well the economy is booming. If one side is able to put their fingers on the scale when it comes to who's allowed to vote, if they're able to put their fingers on the scale when it comes to drawing the districts in which those chosen few voters will be able to vote, that gives a minority in this country and in states the ability to control the majority of the people. And that is not at all representative democracy.
And people forget this. I mean, Biden won a significant electoral college victory, right? Well over 300. But if you take the closest states, a switch of 40,000 votes, Jeff, in the closest states, and Trump would still be president. And believe me, the restrictions that are being talked about in these other states and in Michigan could easily switch 40,000 votes. Heck, they'll switch a lot more than that, and will have an enormous impact in changing election results in the future, in addition to the partisan gerrymandering that you just mentioned.
Oh, I'm well aware that we came 40,000 votes away from me being in Guantanamo re-education camp.
I'd have been your lawyer, Jeff, no matter where you ended up. We'd have got
Thanks,
you out
Mark.
Of there.
Thanks for having my back.
We'd have sprung you.
Pollster Bernie Porn joins the conversation with Mark and Jeff after these messages. Show your support for preserving our republic at The Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience accurately measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and other federal, state, and local issues. Epic MRA is one of the most quoted polling firms in the country. Clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, local governments, labor unions, interest groups, and businesses throughout Michigan. Whether it's measuring voter opinion about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation can earn voter approval, Epic MRA is known as the go-to Michigan pollster. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Bernie Porn is co-founder of the Michigan-based public opinion research company, Epic MRA. Now in its 36th year, the company is ranked as Michigan's top polling firm by 538.com. Bernie has nearly a half century in public policy research, beginning as a staffer in the Michigan House of Representatives, where I first met him back in the 1980s.
Epic MRA is the most quoted polling firm in Michigan and regularly cited by both national and state media outlets. Michigan media clients include the Detroit Free Press, WXYZ TV7, Wood TV8, WJRT TV12, and WLNS TV6. The company's most recent poll, conducted for the Detroit Free Press, is at the heart of today's discussion. And I've known Bernie for nearly 30 years, and I met him during when I was working in the House of Representatives. So that seems to be the kind of the common denominator is the House of Representatives, and everybody has a good relationship with Bernie Porn.
So, Bernie Porn, welcome.
Glad to be with you, Mark and Jeff.
It's great to have you with us. I got to tell you, Bernie, I'm just going to ask this. Look, as somebody who's lived and died and digested polls for decades, same with my colleague Jeff here, you know, your industry has come in for a lot of criticism, you know, 216, less so 218, but even in 220. And I want to hear kind of your diagnosis. When people say, oh, the polls were off, they predicted Hillary would win and she lost. And even last year, we saw some of that. So I want to hear your take, your thoughts about the state of the polling industry and all these criticisms. You've been at this for decades. What do you think?
Well, to a certain extent, in 2016 and in 2020, I think there was a lie factor to at least a certain extent. I know in 2020, we had 5% saying that they were voting for a third-party candidate. 1% ended up voting for a third-party candidate. And when I went back, and I didn't think about it at all, when we did that poll, the last one before the election, because in 2016, we had about 14 or 15% voting for a third party candidate. And so I thought, well, this is down to 5%. So that means that there's nothing really wrong with the polling. And we had 49 to 41% Biden over Trump. And when I looked at the 4% that went for Trump, I realized that these guys are really inconsistent with their comments and their positions on issues. So I said, yeah, they're probably lying. And when you add that to Trump's numbers, you end up with 45%. And then we all along thought that they were going to divide up the undecided voters pretty evenly, which they did. And when you do that, you end up with exactly where the election ended up. In 2016, I know that we saw Hillary at 11%. Then she had her health scare on 9/11, and she dropped down to a 3-point lead. And then she went back up to 11 points during the debates. And then we saw her drop down to 7 points after the WikiLeaks, and then down to only a 4-point lead with 1 week to go and the Comey letter. And I said, well, given the trend line, things are going to be close. And right after we did that, well, I had that poll released and said, you know, Hillary doesn't turn out enough African-Americans. She could well lose the election, given the trend line and how fast the numbers are evaporating for Hillary. Well, she did, in fact, end up losing by 10,000 votes. And the trend line ended up exactly as I thought it may. It was going to be either very close one way or the other. The last time we had that was back when we did a poll right before the Blanchard election. And I know that at the time, I was of course, doing this off on the side. And we did the Blanchard-Engler matchup. And I know that the then-Speaker Gary Owen called me and said, well, how did the poll turn out? And I said, well, you know, we got trouble at the top of the ticket. He says, oh, is Levin in trouble? I said, no, Levin's going to be fine. I said, it's Blanchard. I said, he could well lose it. He didn't tell me that he was in Blanchard's office on the speakerphone. And so Blanchard piped in and said, oh, Bernie Tubby says I'm just fine. And I says, well, Governor, I think it's going to be a very close election and you could lose it. And indeed, that is what happened. So I have always been very confident in our numbers, even in 2020. But I'll tell you one thing, the next time, if in fact Trump is on the ballot and we're testing in 2024, I'm going to ask some additional questions to flesh out whether or not those folks voting for third party candidates are lying to us. And I will be able to figure it out as to whether or not there's a lie factor just by, I haven't figured out quite what I'm going to ask them, but I am going to ask them something that will determine whether or not there's a lie factor.
Well, you know, it wasn't just, you know, outside pollsters that got it wrong in 2016. I'll tell you, the Clinton campaign kept telling us, oh, we're fine. We're going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Well, they were wrong. And we've been paying the price ever since. I'm sorry, Jeff, did I interrupt your question?
I was just going to say those third party candidates that people say they're voting for, you should ask if they're like voting for Ronald Grump. You know,
and after the recount, Chris Thomas mentioned anecdotally, no secret, that he heard reports around the state that there were a lot of write-in votes for like Bernie Sanders and other kinds of folks. And who knows, that may be a phenomenon of people saying, ah, Hillary's going to win and I can, you know, express my conscience, write in my favorite guy. And then after the election, I said, oops, maybe I shouldn't have been so confident, right?
Yep. And had she continued with her economic message and not gotten waylaid on attacking Trump on things that people are already settled on in terms of questioning his background with women and everything. Those issues, I think, probably did not help her. If she stuck with the economy, and I believe Stan Greenberg came to the same conclusion in his national polling, I think that she would have been okay.
Just some of the tactical decisions they made. Barack Obama comes to Michigan on Monday before the election. Where do they send him? They send him to Ann Arbor. It's like, what are you doing? He doesn't need to be in Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor's going to be fine. Right. And so I was like, you know, tactical and strategic, both ends.
Contrast that to 2020 when, like, the week before the election, maybe the weekend before the election, Joe Biden is in Traverse City. in the Traverse City media market, because they knew how close they saw the trend, you know, the narrowing. They were taking nothing for granted. They had at least learned from Clinton's mistakes. And in one of our earlier podcasts, Stan Greenberg was one of our guests, and we talked a little bit about this. And I think that, you know, looking back, he sees things, you know, clearly in retrospect, as we all do. So, but you know, let's turn, if you will, to the recent Epic MRA Detroit Free Press survey that was out this week. I think some of the data is still being released, but there were some very interesting findings that I think really underscore the intense polarized politicized environment we find ourselves in. And that's incredible. Demonstrated closely with the Whitmer Craig numbers. And I'd love to hear your take on that.
Well, when you have a tied race, and by the way, back in February, we matched her against Miller, and that was the same thing, a one-point lead for Whitmer. This one is a one-point lead, 45-44, Whitmer over Craig, and Craig is unknown by 52% of the voters in Michigan. So very polarized. You've got Republicans simply voting for Craig because he's running against Whitmer. And there's another 17%. That recognize Craig's name, but they haven't formed an opinion. So when you've got numbers like that, and it's very polarized, right, you know that they're voting for or against the incumbent. The other thing that I think is influencing things, the party ID, usually you've got a 3-4-5 point advantage for Democrats. And sometimes if there's a wave election in a presidential year, you'll have it up to an 8-point lead. But in the past, we've had about 3 or 4 points consistently for Democrats. This one was dead even, 41-41. You had Whitmer getting 89% of Democratic votes, Craig getting 87% of Republican votes, and undecideds going slightly for Whitmer. Except she was getting less of a vote among independent men, but 40% of independent men are undecided.
So, Bernie, I'm going to ask you to take out your crystal ball here. Suppose Craig gets tied to Trump. I mean, he's dodged that so far, right? I mean, yesterday he was asked, well, you know, do you think the election was stolen? As well, I don't have enough information yet, right? He's dodging that question. So, in your crystal ball, what happens if he gets tied to Trump? Hurt him or help him?
Well, he said he would accept Trump's endorsement.
That's right.
If you want to be separated in some way from Trump, you know, you can't have it both ways. And if he takes and accepts Trump's endorsement and doesn't disown it, why, that will have an impact if it is used by the Democrats and by Whitmer to make a separation there among independent voters. Because in our poll, 39%, it was 40% had a favorable opinion, but now Donald Trump has 39% with 53% unfavorable. It was 55% unfavorable back in February. So he's running below the Republican base in Michigan. And that, I think, would suggest that he will not be benefited because Craig is getting most of the Republican vote anyway right now. The other thing that could be a problem for Craig, and by the way, we did a poll a few years ago in Detroit during the mayoral election, and James Craig had 75% favorable rating, and Duggan had 60% favorable rating. So I think those are the kind of numbers as police chief. I don't know whether that is something that represents where he is at or police departments are at right now. But at that time, he was thought to be walking on water in Detroit. And the only thing is that he is also, I think, vulnerable on basically saying that he wants everybody in Detroit and everybody, and I'm assuming everybody statewide, to have a gun. You know, very easy in terms of not trying to regulate at all the ownership of guns. And he thinks that people are going to be safer if everybody has a gun. And I'm not sure that that's something that people are going to go along with.
Yeah, so the Trump endorsement and the hardcore NRA position are surefire ways to position himself and win a primary. Great. You won the Republican nomination. Now, when you're a Republican running statewide in Michigan, it's still a game of addition, not subtraction, as you're on your way to November. And so I think you can definitely make the case, as you did just a minute ago, that Craig is kind of at he's getting the Republican vote right now. How does he add to that? How does he attract more independents? I mean, the Trump endorsement, the NRA position, are kryptonite to college-educated suburban voters who just said no way to Trump. They may have reverted and voted for Republicans down ballot, but if Jim Craig becomes the kind of the surrogate, the de facto Trump on the ballot go around in 2022, the way Bill Schuette positioned himself in 2018, I don't see how somebody like Jim Craig, without a single bit of demonstrated political skills and ability, can best the performance of Bill Schuette, who arguably was like, I don't know, has politician, you know, DNA. Everything about Bill Schuette is political, is campaign, is how to do things the smart and right way as a politician. Except he couldn't come within 10 points of Whitmer.
And, you know, the other issue that I think is having an impact, what we saw in 2020 is when Biden used the phrase that there's a problem with systemic racism in the country, people responded to that. We tested that message and 75% said, yes, there is a problem with systemic racism. There was protest about the George Floyd death. You had up to 70% nationwide in favor of Black Lives Matter. But then someone decided that they needed to attach defund the police to that. All of a sudden, you saw the numbers dropping for Black Lives Matter. And at the same poll that we had 75% saying, they thought, yes, systemic racism is a problem, as you describe it on all of the different areas of life. You had 48% to 45% saying they had a favorable opinion of Black Lives Matter, and 58% opposed the idea of defunding the police, even after we told them this would not eliminate police departments. It would simply reshuffle some of the funding for it to provide social services and mental health services for some of the kind of stops that they have. And I think that is largely why Democrats were unable to pick up some seats that they were expected to in the United States Senate. And I think that's why they lost several seats that they were not expected to in the U.S. House. And even Jim Clyburn said that that was the reason. And I know that Greenberg had in his polling a lot of that in his national polls. And we saw it in our polling. And I think that makes it more difficult. And if the Democrats are in a difficult position because they have to rely on the African-American base to get out in statewide elections and for many other office holders and sections of districts. But you have to really be very skillful in terms of talking about systemic racism. I don't remember more than one or two times where Joe Biden talked about Black Lives Matter simply because of the association with defunding the police. And he repeatedly said that he is not in favor of defunding the police. And the Republicans are trying right now to attach defunding the police. And even James Craig is talking about how the Democrats are just in favor of defunding the police. And so that's why I'm better as a candidate for fighting crime. So they're trying to walk into the same positioning on that issue and use it again. And when I heard the defund the police, I envisioned the kind of ads that they ended up running about, you know, you call 911 and nobody's there.
I made ads like that over the years. I heard it. You know, the minute that came out, I could envision what my former colleagues were going to do with that messaging, and they did.
I envisioned it as well.
Yep.
I said, oh, this is going to be bad. The only thing that was worse was, I think, back in 88 when I had been urging Greenberg and others to have Michael Dukakis at the Warren tank plant standing on a tank saying, you know, with a conventional weapons gap, if I'm elected, why, you're going to have to build a whole new section to close that conventional weapons gap. And then when I saw the ad that they came up with, I just cried.
Well, you know, you just you,
and they said, well, it's only going to run for another couple of days. I said, you want to bet?
30 years later, it's still
you're going to see that forever.
There's a well-known Michigan Democrat who takes credit for that ad. I will not out him. on this program. Yeah, that was terrible. Bernie, if I can, I want to go back to the race piece for a moment. Critical race theory. Is this the Republicans trying to do another defund the police? Is that what's going on with these demagogic attacks on critical race theory?
That's what they're trying to do. However, I do think that school boards and everyone else, and I've been sending out our polling numbers to, because we have, our biggest clients are school districts. And so I've been sending our polling saying, frame it in a way that talks about systemic racism. Another suggestion was that you frame it in a way in terms of teaching kids about the objectives of Martin Luther King. How on earth are Republicans going to object to some of that kind of framing? If you use critical race theory, nobody has really defined it yet. And there are school boards that are being attacked for wanting to use critical race theory that have not even discussed it. Grand Ledge schools, they haven't even discussed critical race theory, but they're being attacked for it anyways. And so talking about systemic racism, nobody objects to that. And talk about how, yes, indeed, there is a racism that can be addressed. And that's, whether it's a kumbaya message about trying to bring everybody together to solve problems. There is a way to frame it, I think. But that is clearly a wedge issue that the Republicans are trying to use, the critical race theory. And I would like to do more polling on it to see what messages would work best in terms of reinforcing the need to do history and talking about history in a way that you're not going to get those folks who are going crazy about critical race theory not understanding it and supporting it.
Yeah, well, the Republican playbook is going to be exactly that. That when you said it, no one's been able to define it. I disagree. I think the Republicans have defined it because no one else cares to. They have defined it. And the fact that they're getting people to talk about it and respond to it and react to it means that the argument is being had on their turf, on their terms. And I think that to dismiss what they're trying to do and say as utter nonsense, rather than try to explain it and how it's not happening and how this isn't what we're trying to do, the more time we spend rebutting their debate or their talking points, the less time we spend talking about the things that are really going to move voters to a majority position in this state. And that is not today the position held by Republicans.
And that is exactly why I'd love to do more polling on critical race theory in terms of how to frame it, not rebut and argue against it, but to frame it in a way that is positive about why are you against talking about history?
Because this was something when I was running Republican campaigns, this was something that was fairly easy to do, would be to chum the waters on some issue like this to, distract the Democrat candidates and in their messaging. Because if they were getting traction on the things they wanted to talk about, those kitchen table issues, and, we weren't in position to defend, on the state of the economy or the right direction of the state or whatever it was at that point, send out distraction over here. And invariably, we'd get Democrat candidates, especially for the legislature, to take the bait and be off running after that rabbit. And so
then
that argument, then the whole race becomes about, whether or not they support critical race theory. And then the Republican wins and everyone says, how did they win that district when, and this is how.
Well, and that brings up another issue. Right now, what you're seeing in the school districts is a debate about vaccinations and also masking. And we tested that extensively in this poll. You want to talk about that for just a minute?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, go ahead, Bernie.
We had 69% saying that they are fully vaccinated, another 1% partially, 5% not vaccinated, but they intend to get vaccinated, and 18% not vaccinated, and they have absolutely no intention of getting vaccinated. When we last tested that, 70% said that they'd either definitely get vaccinated or probably get vaccinated. And you had 27% saying that they would definitely not get vaccinated or probably not. And most of the folks that said they wouldn't get vaccinated are Republicans. As a matter of fact, in the crosstabs, you've got 80% or 90% of Democrats saying they've gotten vaccinated and only 54% of Republicans saying they have gotten vaccinated and a few more percent in the 60s for independent voters. That's something that I think is important to look at. But on vaccination mandates, 61% oppose it. And in every situation that we tested, except for the 48% to 48% favor and oppose for college students to attend in-person classes or associate with other students when indoors on campus, that was evenly tied. But all other situations, even to fly on airlines or use public transportation, slightly more, 50 to 47% were opposed, 53 to 43 on indoor public meetings, 52 to 44 on sporting events, 52 to 44 on concerts, 51 to 43 against on vaccines for children in school, 53% for restaurant owners to be able to require customers to get vaccinated, and 59% against requiring it in churches. For employers, which many employers are looking at requiring it right now, 50 to 47% said that they oppose it. That's one where I would think that Whitmer would be smart to say, leave it to the employers working and negotiating with the unions to determine whether or not they should do that. That's not something that I should get into. However, when asking about masking, when asking about masking, 60% they say they either try to never wear a mask, 39%, or 16 sometimes wear a mask, 44% always or mostly wear a mask. But 52 to 44% say they would support a mandate for masking statewide. And in the individual applications, 60% support it for airlines or other public transit. Next, 57% for employers, especially in enclosed work areas. And 3% college students at 56%. Next, for students to be able to attend in-person classes, 55%. Down in Oakland County, you've got 60%. And all of these applications only go down to 53% to go to, the lowest is to go to a restaurant, which is 1 point higher than the statewide mandate number. So on that issue, I would say that Whitmer should not just let that be decided by at the local level. I would think that given the numbers, she should say, yeah, we ought to have a mandate for masking. I think that that would be a good position to take. But I'm not going to do that for vaccinations. That should be left to employers, and that should be urged upon people, because the numbers are dropping in terms of those who say they're not going to get vaccinated. And the reason is 55% said that they thought the COVID crisis was improving back in February when we tested it. But now that dropped down to 30%, with 35% saying it's about the same and 30% saying it's gotten worse. So things have changed dramatically, and Delta is scaring the daylights out of people, and more are getting vaccinated. And I think you'll chip away to the point where only, you know, 10% or so will not get vaccinated.
Since the governor's office is just waiting to hear my opinions on what they should do, I agree with you largely, but I would add the exception. I think she should force or come out for a vaccine mandate for school employees and for healthcare workers in public health and in schools. I think that that is a win-win. Maybe your numbers back that up, maybe they don't, but I think she's overperformed, I think, throughout this pandemic, and her numbers have held. They've dropped recently, but they've held fairly strong over the course of this year and a half during the pandemic. And that's because she's acted boldly. If she starts being timid now in the face of reelection, I think that's where she can start to, if you start playing prevent defense, that's where you can lose the game. I think act boldly, act to protect kids and protect the vulnerable, make sure nursing home workers are vaxxed, healthcare workers are vaxxed, and I think she's got a winning situation.
I would agree, and I think that that is a not doing damage to her by supporting especially healthcare workers.
Yeah, and I pick that fight with the legislature. I would, even in face of unlock, I would pick that fight. If there's an executive order that can be issued, whatever it might be, I would force them to defy her, to challenge her, to try to reverse that and make this election 1 year out framed about who's protecting the greater public interest, not just the health, but the economic health and the physical health of the people of this state.
I would agree. I would agree on that, because that's not the same as some of these other groups that apply to everybody. You're specifically dealing with the public health issue.
And with that, Jeff and I have a million questions, Bernie, but we're out of time for this week. Thank you so much for joining us and for giving us your insight. I mean, you've been at this for decades in Michigan and nationally.
Since we were new.
The experience you bring is just really, really valuable. We appreciate your insights today.
Well, thank you for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed our discussion.
Great. Thanks, Bernie.
Take care. You too, Jeff.
You, Bernie. Thanks so much.
That's a wrap for another week. Our great thanks to Bernie Porn for sharing the numbers and his experience with us.
We encourage your comments and questions. Email us at comments@republicpodcast.com. Or you can add your comments on our Facebook page or via our website.
And don't forget to check out our new merch center. Just go to arepublicpodcast.com and click on the merch store button.
If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Jeff Timmer.
And I'm Mark Brewer. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic if you can keep it on your favorite podcast app. A Republic if you can keep it is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.